This is an ABC podcast.
This is the WA Country Hour on ABC Radio WA.
Hello, how are you this afternoon? I'm Kate Forrester, here with you for the next hour. Well, a little later, just before the news at 1 o'clock, we are celebrating a really big milestone this afternoon. Murdoch University's Veterinary School is marking 50 years here in Western Australia. Very good innings. And chances are you probably know someone who's been through the program, or maybe you're a graduate yourself, or you might be a farmer that's hosted a vet student on your property. Either way, the school has played a huge role in shaping our state's agricultural and animal health industries. So let's celebrate it here on the Country Hour this Friday afternoon. 12:06. Here on the Country Hour, right across Western Australia. Well, a commercial fishing family in Augusta says they're losing more than just a business after last week's announcement by the state government that it will be permanently shutting down commercial fishing of demersal species between Kalbarri and Augusta. Jeff and Beverly Cook have been shark fishing for 45 years between Bunbury and Warpole. The Cooks say they typically catch only 1-2% of demersal species, but under the new zero bycatch rules, they stand to lose their licences and 100% of their income. They had hoped to pass the business on to their sons, but that no longer seems possible.
It's like being in the ocean and drowning and no one's putting an arm up to help you. And that's what it is, and that's what DEPIRB is doing to us. They're throwing us in the ocean, put a weight round a leg, dragging us down without having any help.
That's how Augusta fisher Beverly Cook describes the impact on commercial fishers after the state government announced a permanent shutdown of commercial demersal fishing along the west coast from January 1st, 2026.
I was at home here and Jeffrey called me from the fishing boat and said his deckhand Clint had seen something on Facebook about the big changes in the fishing industry, and I just said, oh, here we go again. And then about an hour later, I opened it up and then found out on Facebook. And then in a couple of hours later, I checked my email and got the Dear Jeffrey one with just what was changing, permanent closures, but it's on Facebook.
After 45 years on the water, Beverly and her husband, Jeff Cook, have built a life around the industry, and they call Augusta home.
Oh, well, we're in shock because we've been blindsided by that decision. And our fishery is as good or better than when I first started. No shortage of our target species. It's just a family business, and a lot of our shark gets consumed here in the southwest. You know, keep the hotels and fish and chip shops, and it's a good product, you know.
Well, Jeff and I met in 1979. We fished off the Gulf of Carpentaria, and then we come back and had my first son, so we bought the fishing boat, which is a very small boat. We had to borrow money and we moved to Augusta. We lived at Windy Harbour for a couple of years and then we moved to Augusta. And then we didn't have any money. There wasn't any fish. And then we became a managed fish in 1988. We bought the house here, luckily, 1983. And then we just had four kids and just continued fishing. Jeff and I worked the Tracy Lee for 2 years on our own.
Beverly says by the time an email was sent out formally confirming the closure, families had already panicked. And what upset her most was the lack of information about support. The mother of four says the absence of clear mental health support from the government is putting lives at risk.
Even at the meeting in Perth, that I tell them there's no relief funding straight away. So all the deckhands and that and all the workers and any repayments, any fuel bills, we've got insurance coming up, that's just going to affect us straight away. The mental health impact on everyone is nearly suicidal. And it's only when I requested the information from the hotline that when they sent the first letter out with just a copy of what's been in the media, that they put the Stay Afloat health line out. And I've told every single deckie, every single person to ring that Stay Afloat and register it, because we're not going to cope, but a lot of them are too proud. But, yeah, very hard.
That notice sent to licence holders directed fishers to the industry mental health service Stay Afloat. But federal funding for Stay Afloat in WA ended in September 2025, just 2 months before the ban was announced. The organisation confirmed its services in WA were paused due to lack of funding. But a spokesperson for the Fisheries Minister insists the helpline numbers still connect callers to support services and say the closure is necessary to protect vulnerable fish stocks.
What went through my mind is that here we go again. To get any fair compensation from DPIRB is going to be another year battle of continuous bookwork, like Nagara State Marine Park. The first thing is that we need to first of all get an independent body to handle the compensation process. And that's all I'm going. This is going to be paperwork, paperwork, paperwork. It has been the aim of certain people to shut us down permanently for a long time. We've always fought it. We've had cuts and closures and all that type of stuff. But I didn't think that Jackie Jarvis and Minister Fisheries would go against the vice of DPIRB and close us permanently. We could have had the same closure as Wreckfish. Then we looked what's happening later on, because the sharks are going to intensify. They're going to eat all the smaller fish. But she went against the vice of DPIRB and closed it permanently. I just think that if Jackie Jarvis come down and talk to fishermen, we could cope with a two-year ban as long as we can foresee some foreseeable future. You know, as long as there's something there. But now it's just this black wall, just cut and dry. We can have 50% reduction again. We can have closures. We can do anything to measure it when we reopen, but they've just given us nothing. So I can't see us going anywhere. They have picked on us because we're only a small fishery, and it's prejudiced against the gill nets because they get a lot of flank with it, and they've just done it.
Hoping that some of the other me family would take it on, you know, boys. I've got two boys that are doing other things at the moment. We didn't really want to get out of fishing.
So it just means it's gone. This means there's nothing. It's like the family farm. If you've got a house that you can leave to people to inherit, you know, the normal person, that's gone. It's like someone taking up and just selling it.
Do you feel for the next generations that are coming through who might have wanted to do this?
I feel for them because there is no next generation. There's no next generation for us. There's no next generation at all. So they've all gone.
You mentioned earlier about a next chapter. What do you hope that is for you guys?
Well, it's 3 months before they're going to do any compensation. So if 3 months before they're going to put anything out, they're doing 43, whatever it is to get that going. It'll be 12 months before, stated at the minute, before you get any money or anything like that. So we've got to struggle through that period. The next chapter is probably trying to sell the Tracy Lee, and then maybe get to go on a holiday. We won't go fishing, mate, because you can't fish.
Commercial fishers Beverly and Jeff Cook, who operate under Eagle Bay Fishery, and they were speaking with Rachel Boothman. 12 minutes past 12. And a short while ago, Richard Hudson asked State Fisheries Minister Jackie Jarvis for her thoughts on the predicament the Cook family are now in following her big announcement last week.
Oh, yeah, look, I mean, it was a tough decision, Richard. I'm not going to lie. There's actually 9 vessels that target shark and demersals in that zone, in that West Coast zone. There's 41 boats altogether between Kalbarri and Augusta that are impacted by this West Coast closure. About two-thirds of them have licences in other areas, so they might have licences in the South Coast, but I acknowledge there are 10 or 11 boats that don't have licences elsewhere. It was a really tough decision. I'm not going to make any bones about it. What I will say is we're working hard to make sure that compensation package is generous. It'll be about 4 times their annual gross value of product to make sure that they're looked after. But yeah, look, I had to make a choice between 41 boats that take 56% of all demersals in that region, and the 40,000 recreational fishers who also want to target that area.
Can you see why they feel hard done by, though? If your target is shark, that's your main game, and if they're claiming only roughly 2 to 6% of their catch ends up as the demersal species, as bycatch, do you think it's fair that they also get included in simply being saying, OK, you can no longer go for the shark, you're out, effectively?
Well, look, I mean, that fishery still takes, you know, about 28 tonnes of demersal fish, so I appreciate what they're saying. One of the challenges we have is, you know, these species, they get pulled up very quickly, they die from barotrauma, so these fish are dying. and I understand and absolutely completely get what they're concerned about, but they are still catching demersal fish and they are in the West Coast zone. And because we've made that decision about ending commercial fishing in the West Coast bioregion, that's why they've been brought into this, is because they are still catching those at-risk species.
The big announcement that caught a lot of people by surprise was the sudden closure of fishing for demersal fish to Pilbara trawlers and also to commercial operators in the West Coast region from Kalbarri to Augusta. Who offered the advice for those to be permanent closures?
So, look, I mean, it's you know, I tabled all of the science and all of the reports. I gave them to the opposition back in September and you know, and that quite clearly says that, you know, recovery to target level will not occur until 2040 unless current catches are substantially reduced. And so when I went to WAFIC, the peak body, and said, what can we do in the West Coast? What can we do? The response was that fishers could not take any more cuts. Some of these 41 boats are only allowed to fish 1 or 2 days a month because they've had so many cuts to what they can take. And so WAFIC made it really clear that a lot of these businesses wouldn't survive another cut. WAFIC actually put forward that we should actually stop recreational fishers for longer and give recreational fishers more cuts, and that we should actually, I guess, take 20 tonnes off recreational fishers that had been reallocated in the past and give it back to these commercials. So we had one sector saying, we understand sustainability is an issue, but our financial sustainability is more important and we can't take any more cuts. So I have made the decision, it was my decision, to say that if we buy out these 41 commercial boats, we immediately return 56% of the catch. And we're talking, you know, 280 tonnes of fish is actually, you know, not taken next year by doing this commercial cut. They are fish then that become available to our recreation and tourism sector. And I appreciate it is really difficult, but I had a choice between 41 private businesses and 40,000 recreational fishers. This is not like farming. This is wild catch fish that belongs to everyone.
But you say that you're following the science, but WAFIC is of the understanding that DPIRD, your fisheries department, with the scientists, recommending fishing of demersal fish gets shut down until stock recovers. So definitely reopening to wreck fishers in 21 months. What's the logic in that?
The logic is that we will have basically sanctuary zones. So we've worked through this with the scientists. So we will have long-term closures during spawning, and we will have these at least 10 years of these sanctuary zones. And so we will work through them. So between now and September 2027, we will work through where these sanctuary zones are, and we will make sure that we have those recovery areas. So they will be areas where recreational fishing won't be allowed until the stock recovers, and we've worked through that with the scientists at DPIRD and with the industries, and we believe that we can get that same outcome. So by buying back the commercial sector and then restricting recreational access in certain areas, we think we can get to the recovery area we need to.
But can you see why the opposition are calling it a captain's call? Because DPIRD, your own department was not calling for a permanent closure to the commercial operators.
My own department, this is in the report, as I said, my own department was saying that we should be closing permanently 2040 to everyone, and this is a captain's call, absolutely. I said in September I had to make...
Just to clarify, are you saying DPIRD did call for a permanent closure to commercial operators?
They said a closure of the fishery. So a closure of the fishery means no one fishes.
Yeah, were they calling for a permanent closure?
Well, permanent, I mean, the opposition have said, why are you closing it permanently? Why don't you just allow the commercial sector back in 2040? I mean, it beggars belief that you would genuinely think that these 41 boats would just not do anything for 15 years and get no payout. By doing the permanent closure, I trigger a legislative process to give them a compulsory payout. If I didn't do that, you would have businesses with no income for 15 years. I mean, I'm not sure how they think that would work.
Okay, let's just move on to the Pilbara trawlers. It was only last year, it's my understanding, that there was an assessment of the Western Australian Pilbara fish trawl, you know, managed fishery by the Federal Department of Environment, DPIRT advised that recent mortality rates of dolphins and sawfish was below levels that would threaten sustainability of those populations. So can you see why the operators in that area were blindsided by the fact that you've suddenly taken them right out of the equation?
Richard, they shouldn't have been blindsided. I certainly tried to meet with at least the largest fisher up there before the announcement. They didn't want to meet with me. They seemed to think they didn't have to take any cuts. So there's two issues. There's the fact that, you know, 15 dolphins drown a year in their trawling nets, 20 endangered sawfish drown. And so that might be under certain levels, but I wasn't comfortable with that. But there was also the fact that the demersal fish were also at severe risk in that area. I wanted to meet with them to discuss taking a significant cut and about them transitioning to a trap fishery, which, you know, dolphins drowning or sawfish drowning, and they didn't want to meet. And so I, again, had to make a tough call. And I, again, don't make any bones about this. I mean, I genuinely wonder if people who are heading down to their local fishmonger to buy fish that comes from the Pilbara knew that they were responsible for basically the death of endangered species. I think people would be shocked.
Wasn't it just last year, though, that the Pilbara trawlers were endorsed as being conditionally sustainable under the Environmental Protection and Biodiversity Conservation Act? That was part of an independent scrutiny under the World Trade Obligations?
So that World Trade Obligation was with regard to looking at their bycatch, the dolphins and the sawfish. And so whilst on paper it might seem to be acceptable to have dolphins drowning, the other bit of the puzzle that I assessed, though, was the demersal. So the feds were looking at World Trade Organization. The World Trade protocol is about endangered species and bycatch. I also then had to marry that up with the fact that we had a demersal species at severe risk. So the two together led me to my decisions. And Richard, these are my decisions. I'm taking ownership of this. These were tough decisions, but I stand by them.
Just chatting to State Fisheries Minister Jackie Jarvis. Minister,
with the Pilbara, I might just also say WAFIC also wanted the trawling to continue, but WAFIC put in a submission that recreational fishing should be suspended in the Pilbara. Recreational fishing in the Pilbara is less than 2% of the take, and yet WAFIC still wanted me to give the whole region to the Pilbara, to the commercial sector.
Just on another point, if a playpen gets closed in my area, I'll take my kids to the neighbouring suburb. Are you worried about what's going to happen if people can no longer fish in the West Coast region? Have you got some science on what the impact is going to be on the neighbouring areas? And I'm talking the Gascoyne and the South Coast.
Yeah, look, I mean, people do travel for fishing. They always have. I mean, we regularly have had, you know, recreational closures in the West Coast where then fishing is open in the other regions. That's not unusual. We will monitor that closely and we will, you know, we will be adjusting bag limits in those other areas come March, which is when those bag limits are due to be assessed. So we will be keeping a close eye on that. You know, we have, cameras at boat ramps, we have electronic monitoring. We actually count the boats going in and out and we will adjust the recreational catch as required.
So are you saying you have enough scientific evidence that you're confident that the transfer of the fishing pressure to pelagics will not put those species under threat?
Yes, we're confident. That's why we invest so much money in these fish aggregating devices. We're really happy with the biomass of the pelagic species. We want more people catching pelagics if they can't catch demersals. So we're happy with that. We're putting in artificial reefs up and down the state, which create new breeding zones for these pelagic fish. The issue with the demersals is they're long-lived fish. They don't reach, you know, full maturity for many, many years. They don't breed as well because of that. So, yes, please target the pelagics. We keep a close eye on everything. There are 100 research scientists in fisheries. We monitor this regularly.
Minister, at the start you mentioned the compensation. We're hearing a lot of criticism. Licensed buybacks are one thing, but what about the compensation for loss of income for those who have now lost their livelihoods? There's a lot of deckies, there's a lot of people involved in the processing side of things. Just before Christmas, not great news that this is all about to be happening for them.
Oh, look, as I said, of these 41 boats, the vast majority of them were fishing one or two days a week. So they may say there's a lot of deathies. I've asked WAFIC to say to me if they are genuinely concerned that there are people who won't receive a payout from their employer, that they should let me know. There is, as I said, many, many of these licence holders were only allowed to fish 1 or 2 days a month because of the actual, quote, like the cuts they've had over numerous years. You know, this was described to me as death by a thousand cuts, that, you know, over the years they've had so many cuts. When we did a voluntary buyout in 2023, we were actually oversubscribed in this fishery. So more fishers wanted to voluntarily leave the industry than we had funds allocated. This time we've allocated a significant amount, $20 million. As I said, 41 boats are sharing a total gross production of $5 million. We will work through this with the industry. This is a generous buyout.
Two last quick questions. Number one is, if we're losing some of the people who target sharks, are we going to see shark numbers go up?
Well, I don't think so. What we've done is on all the other zones, there were certain fishers who couldn't target sharks. We've lifted the ban on commercial catching of sharks for people like rock lobster fishermen. So there will still be shark available to our fish and chip shops. There will still be shark available. There was, as I said, a sort of a bit of a blanket ban on other commercial fishers targeting sharks. We've lifted that because I'm acutely aware that, you know, a lot of people, particularly those fish and chip shops and those lower price markets, enjoy shark. And particularly up in the north where we know shark bite-offs are a problem for recreational fishers, I'm expecting that there will be more shark coming out of the water in a sustainable way where it's obviously allowed.
I'm more interested in the ones that might be targeting me.
Well, I understand that white pointers are protected internationally, so I'm not sure I can help you there, Richard.
Final question. How do you think WAFIC has handled this, the negotiations with yourself in the lead up to your announcements?
Well, look, I mean, WAFIC are paid $1.4 million a year of taxpayer money to negotiate on behalf of commercial fishers. I've had regular meetings with them. They've came to our fishing forum and they presented me with a submission. I can only go on the submission that they put forward. I'm not going to comment on their relationship with commercial fishers, but when I hear stories that commercial fishers were surprised by this, as I said, I've been telling WAFIC this information since September. I accept that WAFIC were not aware that we were going to do a full commercial shutdown, but I would be surprised that people didn't know this was at severe risk because it was public. We had full-page ads in every regional newspaper for a number of weeks from September saying we're at crisis point. Look, that relationship between WAFIC and commercial producers is between them.
Minister, thanks very much for your time on the Country Hour. And also, if we don't get a chance to chat to you beforehand, have a great Christmas and break.
Thanks, Richard. Well, I won't be getting much of a break, but yeah, thank you.
Oof, a lot of information there. That was State Fisheries Minister Jackie Jarvis speaking with Richard Hudson. What are your thoughts on what the Minister just said? Do you applaud the Minister's captain's call? Do you think she should be following the exact advice from their own experts and departments? Do let me know today, 0448 922 604. And on the text line, there has been a lot of you already wanting to have your say on this topic. Lincoln from Busselton says, you won't be able to get any fish from your local fishmonger because there won't be any professional fishermen to provide the fish. Minister Jarvis doesn't make much sense here. Thank you, Lincoln. And Lindsay says, wreck fishing in the West Coast region allowed again in 2027. Would this happen to coincide with an election? And Rob in Busso says, the Labor government has destroyed the timber industry, the agricultural industry, now the fisheries industry. What industry are they going to destroy next? Wake up, voters. Look what nightmare is happening around you. Thank you, Rob. And Marvin says, cameras at boat ramps? This country has fallen. Please be a part of the program today. You can text in to 0448 922
604. The WA Country Hour on ABC Radio WA.
29 past 12, and Brianna Shepherd is with me for the news headlines.
Hello. Brittany Higgins has been declared bankrupt in a federal court hearing brought on by her former boss, Linda Reynolds. Ms. Reynolds launched the legal action after winning a defamation case against Ms. Higgins earlier this year. The former Liberal senator is pursuing her former staffer for the costs for her legal action, estimated to be in the millions. Police have ruled out arson as the cause of yesterday's bushfire in Perth's east. Authorities had initially treated the Kenwick fire as suspicious, but after investigating, now say it was not deliberately lit. Residents were forced to evacuate as the fire threatened homes and other buildings. No homes were lost, and the fire has now been downgraded from emergency to advice. And ABC Radio Perth's manager says the switch to FM will not disadvantage listeners in the regions. Early next year, the 720 AM frequency will be shut down and ABC local radio will move to the FM band. ABC Radio National and News Radio will also make the switch. Danielle Bender says the FM signal will be the most powerful in Perth, but people in the regions will still be able to listen on their AM dials. More news on the hour.
Thank you very much for that, Brianna. It is 12:30 and in between now and 1 o'clock, I should say, we are going to check in on not only the wool market this week, but we'll also head to Mount Barker just to get the latest on the cattle trade sale. So that coming up before the news at 1 o'clock. Luke Huntington is with me today for the weather. Luke, let's start in the Southwest Land Division. What are conditions like this afternoon and into the weekend?
Yeah, hi Kate. Over the Southwest Land Division, we have seen a line of storms just straddling the very far northeastern parts of the Great Southern and just the very far north of the southeast coastal district. So that's around sort of the Salmon Gums area. There hasn't really been too much rainfall recorded with those storms, so just a few millimetres. But the remainder of the Southwest Land Division's looking pretty clear today. It's still pretty warm through the inland northern parts though, so through the central west and parts of the northern wheat belt, we're looking at sort of 38 degree temperatures, and that's only going to get warmer over the weekend. So, yeah, it is going to be potentially quite a busy day in terms of fire, weather conditions, thunderstorms in the Southwest Land Division. So, beginning tomorrow, we'll see that heat filter down further south with a developing trough offshore. So, we'll see temperatures reaching close to 40 degrees through the inland central west. So, like Mullewa, Morowa getting up to 40 degrees, and the northern parts of the central wheat belt getting up to around 37 or 38, even down into the lower west region, which includes Perth area, getting up to sort of the high 30s tomorrow. In terms of thunderstorm activity, for tomorrow, we are expecting thunderstorms to be over the central and northern parts of the Southwest Land Division. So that would include most of the central west district and through the wheat belt area. Those thunderstorms are going to be sort of mainly in the afternoon period. There could be just a chance of storms from the morning through the wheat belt. With those storms, there could be a chance of damaging winds through the afternoon period. So there is a potential of severe thunderstorms through that area. And as we head into Sunday, that's probably going to be the most sort of active day for thunderstorms. The trough will deepen quite rapidly off the coast, and we'll see quite a large area of thunderstorms pretty much through most of the Southwest Land Division, just apart from the Esperance region and maybe just inland from Albany. So they could kick off probably from the late morning till early afternoon. And there is a risk of damaging wind gusts with those storms right throughout the lower west district into the southern central west and the north western parts of the wheat belt. So that's from the afternoon, that risk. And we've also got extreme fire dangers over the weekend through parts of the southwest. So just combined with those hot temperatures, and it's also going to be quite windy, especially during the morning period with those gusty easterly to northeasterly winds. So the models aren't really going for too much rainfall with the storms. So there could be a risk of dry lightning over the weekend as well. So that doesn't bode well for the for studying sort of bushfires as well. So be on the lookout for that. and heading into Monday. The trough is still just right on the coast on Monday morning, so it's still going to be pretty warm throughout the southwest land division, and many places in the high 30s, pretty much throughout the whole southwest land division is really is going to be in the high 30s, just apart from the west coast, where it's probably dropping back to the low 30s. And again, windy conditions during the morning period, so we'll see elevated fire dangers, and the thunderstorm risk does continue as well over most parts, especially through the western and central parts of the southwest land division. It'll probably be just the Esperance region which would miss out on any thunderstorms. And then heading into Tuesday, the trough finally moves eastwards, so we'll see maybe just a slight chance of thunderstorms down the trough heading towards the eastern Great Southern into the Esperance area. That's sort of a low risk, but the temperature is still remaining high for that Esperance area. We are going for 39 at Esperance on Tuesday, Seven Gums 42 degrees, so that just shows you just where that heat's heading. But we'll see a cooler change along that west coast with temperatures getting lowering down to the high 20s.
It's not good. Dry lightning, wind and heat, it's not good combinations. All right, Luke, let's head to the northern and eastern forecast districts, please.
Yeah, north and east, yeah, we're seeing quite a few thunderstorms over the Kimberley at the moment. They're just moving offshore in the northwestern area, but we'll see some thunderstorms fire up again this afternoon right throughout that Kimberley, eastern Pilbara into the interior region. And also there's some just extending into the Eucla at the moment. So pretty much over the eastern part of the state, we are seeing those thunderstorms continuing this afternoon. And we are going for an area of severe thunderstorms over that south interior into the northern goldfields region in terms of damaging wind gusts. So we may be issuing severe thunderstorm warnings this afternoon if we do see those damaging wind gusts. And then heading into tomorrow, we do see thunderstorms continuing right throughout the Kimberley region, the central and eastern Pilbara, the interior, the goldfields, the Gascoyne, and then maybe just in the very far northern Eucla. But most of the rainfall will be throughout that Kimberley region. There's not much rainfall through the Gascoyne Goldfields region. So again, dry lightning may be a risk through that area. And then Sunday, we are going for thunderstorms in a similar area, really, right throughout the Kimberley interior, most of the Pilbara, and through the Gascoyne region. Again, there may be some rainfall extending throughout the Gascoyne, but you couldn't rule out the risk of dry lightning through there. And then on Monday, we'll see the thunderstorms in a very, very similar area once again. And Tuesday, the only change is the thunderstorms may push a little bit back further north. So maybe just out of the most of the gold fields, so really just the far northern gold fields, but still forecast through the Kimberley, the northern interior, the northeastern Gascoyne, and through the most of the Pilbara.
Thank you so much, Luke. All right, let's now go to rainfall with Richard Hudson.
Again, it's mostly in the north. So in the Kimberley, Bedford Downs had 12 mils, Dampier Downs 7, Gibb River 13, Columbaroo 10, Kununurra had between 7 and 14 across a few locations, Leopold Downs 7, Liveringa Station 18, Mount House Airstrip had 12, Mount Winifred 17, Old Mornington Homestead 24, Parry Creek Farm 30, Winjana Gorge topped it with 63, and Wyndham had 6 mils. In the Pilbara, Telfer had a bit of a downpour, 9 mils, and in the Goldfields, Egidina, 13 mils. A number of places have a total fire ban in place today, so these shires have one. Beverley, Bruce Rock, Cunderdin, Dalwallinu, Dandaragan, Dowran, Gemelling, Kellerberrin, Corder, Meriden, Mora, Mount Marshall, Muckinbooden, Narrambeen, Northam, Nungarran, Quiriding, Tammin, Training, Victoria Plains, Westonia, Wongan-Ballardieu, Walcatcham, Yilgarn and York. If you want to figure out what you can and can't do during a total fire ban, just go to Emergency WA. You'll find the total fire bans, click on your shire, and it's got all the details there. Also, you just need to be aware if your shire has a harvest ban in place, and due to the risk of fire, a few shires do have a harvest ban in place right now. So that includes the shires of Meriden, Northam, Westonia and Yilgarn. So those four again, Meriden, Northam, Westonia and Yilgarn currently have a harvest ban in place.
Lovely. Thank you, Richard. Okay, we are getting so many texts on the text line about Jackie Jarvis, the Fisheries Minister, earlier on our program. Richard Hudson spoke to her just about the take on the demersal species and those restrictions that have come into play. Daryl Hockey has texted in and he says, the minister says her choice was between 41 commercial fishers and 40,000 recreational fishers. So it's now ensuring that 3 million West Australians can never again have access to unique species like jewfish and bolt-in groper. It's given exclusive access rights to rich West Australians who can afford a really big boat and a four-wheel drive, while the battlers will miss out forever. Gone is our coastal way of living in the West. Thank you, Daryl. And Harry says, as someone who is on the water fishing and diving multiple times a week, I have never seen more pink snapper and small jewfish in the last year than I have in the previous 5 years. I'm seriously interested in where this government got its stock numbers. And John says, the minister just stated, this is not farming. These fish belong to everyone. The ex-Labor minister, Phil Smith, has said that 80% of the WA people don't fish. So where do these people obtain their rightfully owned fish? She has stated that 5 dolphins die in fish nets every year. Please ask her how many dolphins and whales are hit by recreational boats annually. Thank you, John. And Dom from Bull Creek says, no ban on beach fishing. I'm guessing drone sales will be huge. Thank you for your thoughts. And as I said, we are getting so many texts coming through, so I'm really sorry if I don't get to yours. But keep them coming in. It's really interesting to see everyone's perspectives. 0448 922 604. It is 20 minutes away from one.
You're listening to the WA Country Hour on ABC Radio WA.
Well, it's been just over a week after a devastating fire claimed the life of West River farmer Mark Moody. The agricultural community has now rallied to harvest his final crop. So this is near Ravensthorpe, close to the south coast. And over the next few days, more than 24 headers, that's incredible, plus other vehicles from neighbours will be on hand to get the remaining crop off. Mark's son Nathan says the generosity of the farming community has been incredible.
The whole week's been full of emotions and a lot of support from our family. The whole community's been absolutely amazing through this time, and not just our small community. It's been the whole rural sector really that's really reached out and provided so much support. It's unbelievable what type of community we live in and how special the whole agricultural sector is.
At the time of the fire, how much crop was there still to harvest?
We still had 6,000 hectares of our program to go. So we still had probably 60% of the way through.
And I suppose in the immediate days after the fire, when did you start thinking about, well, we've got to get the crop off as well, or did it not even sort of cross your mind?
It didn't cross my mind. That was not an issue in my head, absolutely not at all. It wasn't going to faze me if we got Christmas and that out of the way and we got back into it then. The harvest was not an issue in my mind at all, yeah.
So did it come as a bit of a surprise when you started getting calls from your mates, from your neighbours, from people around the ag community to say, we want to help?
Oh, absolutely. I was just blown away by the amount of people that have reached out to help. Joel Ebert and Jordan McAllister, two very special friends that have stepped up, and they've really just taken it under their wing and take the pressure off me. So they've organised the whole lot, and it's been absolutely seamlessly for me. I've done nothing, so they've really organised it all, and to organise what's happening now, it's been it's massive. It's absolutely massive. They've got a guy I've worked with, David Large, who's dropped everything as well, and he's managed a lot of big corporate situations, and he's dropped absolutely everything to be here and help run and get it all going. So, yeah, those guys have been absolutely unreal. Yeah, there's so many. I think it's 25 headers here today and more coming, and up to 30 or something coming. Heaps of chaser bins and mother bins coming from everywhere. It's unbelievable. Yeah, and then the trucking companies have reached out and just done everything. CBH have done everything as well. They've allowed this, you know, got ready for it all to happen so the grain can keep flowing. Yeah, it's blown me away. Even, you know, last night, guys from town bringing out a barbecue and sending up dinner for everyone. And that was special, just for everyone to get together and have a barbie and a few beers together last night. It was really cool.
What does that say about the part of the world that you live in, do you think?
Oh, it's hard to put words to describe what this is. It's the amazing power of what communities give. It's really amazing. It's hard to describe. It's why everyone that lives in the bush understands. It's why we live out here. It's because of the people and the communities. It's really amazing.
Does it feel like this is that first step towards what it is you all do next?
Well, yeah. Well, Dad was a huge people person. He had connections everywhere. And I think that's so cool that so many people were reaching out to help because of the networks that Dad had and he was so good at. So I think that is going forward. It's just lean on the people that want to help. And we're all going through this as a community together. It's not just me, I know. And our family, it's the whole community that has felt this and will feel it for some time. So, yeah, I think that's the best thing. We're all there for each other. It's really nice. I'll never be able to thank everyone for what the support is. And end of the day, it's Dad's last crop and we're getting it all off with his mates and everyone that he loved to see and be with. So it's cool for me to sit back and just watch it all happen.
You were saying that your family's headers are being driven by your dad's mates at the moment.
Yeah, that's cool. Yep. Rod Ebert's out in there, and I swear I never see him in a red header, but there he is. And it's awesome. Yep, it is awesome to see everyone, jump in and help in some way. Don't need all the machines here, but there's so many people on the ground helping move utes, and it really is something. Yeah, it's really cool.
West River farmer Nathan Moody speaking with Tara DeLandgraft about the community effort to get their family's crop off after the death of his dad in a fire a few weeks ago. And West River is more than 500 kilometres southeast of Perth near Ravensthorpe. And if you want, you can always search for the ABC Rural website online and you will find Tara and Andrew Williams' story about these dozens of harvesters coming to the Moody's family farm. There's also going to be a story on the 7 p.m. news tonight about this amazing community, so make sure you tune in then. It is 14 minutes away from 1 o'clock. Well, half a century ago, Murdoch University opened the doors to its brand new veterinary school, a moment in time that recognised just how vital agriculture is to Western Australia. And today, the university is celebrating its 50th cohort of vet students graduating. Melinda Bell is the Associate Professor at the School of Vet Medicine and also the Associate Dean of Students. And she's also a past student herself. Hey, Melinda, massive congratulations. What a day for the vet school.
It is pretty amazing. We're very, very proud of our graduates and we're very, very proud of the school and what we've contributed to the community of Western Australia, but also the community of now the world, because our graduates are able to work internationally as well.
How do you think in the time you've been involved, vet education, how has it evolved? How different is training today compared to when you first started?
Oh, very different. So when I graduated, we had one lecture on how to do a consultation with a client. We never, ever practiced that skill, which was quite terrifying when you were a new grad. We have a fully embedded communication skills curriculum where the students start in second year practicing these communication skills using actors, using simulations, and using AI-generated simulations as well. And so by the time they graduate, they're very, very good and very experienced at communicating with clients of any sort, small animal farmers, horses. We also spend an awful lot of time throughout our entire curriculum focusing on the well-being of the student, equipping them with a toolbox for well-being and for thriving in the profession. because most people would recognise that being a vet is quite a challenging profession. It's quite a challenging career. We're confronted with difficult situations almost on a daily basis.
Because I can imagine when you first started, it would have not even been a consideration, mental health.
It's not a thing, no. We certainly felt it. It was very much a sink or swim mentality. We often went out into practices, and sometimes you got a really supportive boss, sometimes you got a less than supportive boss. We really struggled. It's not an easy profession to transition to, and there's recognition within the community and within the profession worldwide now that we probably need to do a better job to reduce the attrition from the profession, but also to reduce the mental distress and the suicidality that's existed within the profession for a long period of time. We've got to a point where we're actually improving on our statistics. Attrition is still a concern, but we're certainly much more cognizant of mental well-being.
Why did Murdoch decide that a vet school was needed? And I guess what gap did they see it filling in Western Australia 50 years ago?
Well, we are still the only vet school in Western Australia. We were the fourth vet school to start up in Australia. The very first one was University of Queensland. But of course, there was nothing over this side of the country, and the agricultural community and the pet-owning community needed veterinarians. Murdoch worked with the state government to open up the vet school, and we've supplied vets not only for the state but also for the country. But in 2000, we gained international accreditation status. So essentially that means that our graduates can graduate and then go and work almost anywhere in the world. But what I'm most proud of is that Murdoch University's had a long-standing tradition of what we call the Wadong program. And Wadong in Noongar means crow or the raven, the West Australian raven. And it's a program that supports Aboriginal students to succeed throughout the veterinary course. And we've been supplying and graduating veterinarians since the 80s in the Wadong program, Aboriginal veterinarians. We graduated the first Aboriginal veterinarian who works in the Northern Territory, and he still works there. And today we are graduating three Wadong students. So that is the highest number of Aboriginal graduates that we've had since 1989.
What's on the horizon, do you think, Melinda, for the next 50 years for Murdoch Vet School?
Well, as you probably know, we've been incredibly lucky to receive a $100 million donation to help us build a new teaching building. We are desperately short of clinical teaching spaces, and our hospital is not suitable for the current number of students that we have coming through. It was designed and built in 1975 and then added on to in the early 2000s, and we've run out of room. So we've got that happening in the next 5 or so years, and so that will allow us to expand our cohort from 105 to 150. And I can see that as we move forward, we will be adapting to the needs of society. I know that there's going to be lots of interactions with artificial intelligence. But I also know that the veterinarian and the veterinary client interface is never going to be replaced by Gen AI. There are too many nuances in veterinary medicine for us to be replaced. I know things will be very different. I'm not quite sure what they'll be like, but it'll be very interesting to watch it. And I have no doubt that we'll be able to evolve to it.
Well, Melinda, congratulations on 50 years of Murdoch Vet School, and I hope
Thank
all
you.
The students today at their graduation ceremony really celebrate
yes,
hard.
They will celebrate hard. They're already arriving in their gowns, and they're beautifully dressed, and they're looking so excited. Tomorrow night is the graduation ball. They'll let their hair down there. The staff will be there helping them to do so.
Oh, no doubt. Thank you, Melinda, for your time on the Country Hour today.
No worries. Thanks very much, Kate.
Sounds like to me it's going to be a couch day on Sunday. Melinda Bell is the Associate Professor at the School of Veterinary Medicine and also the Associate Dean of Students. She graduated herself back in 1993 and has started back teaching at Murdoch back in 2000. 7 minutes away from one. Well, there was a trade cattle sale at Mount Barker today. 730 sold, so numbers up about 80 on last week. Tracy Kilner's been at the sale yards all morning.
Large numbers of yearlings this week, dominated by heifers and a good run of heavyweight cows. Yearling values fluctuated on quality, trending down on most weight categories, while good numbers of trade cattle were firm to easier to processors. Heavyweight cows eased with processors selective, while the heavy bulls were firm on last week. Yearling cattle weighing over 400 kilos saw steers sell for 364 to 416 cents, while yearling heifers in the same weight range returned 300 to 398 cents a kilo. The lighter under 400 kilo weights reached 324 to 422 for the steers and 255 to 378 cents for the heifers. Grand steers weighing over 400 kilos made 380 to 400 cents. Weights over 500 kilos sold from 360 to 398 cents. And bullocks over 600 kilos returned 348 to 370 cents. And the heavier over 750 kilo weights sold from 236 to 260 cents a kilo. Grand heifers weighing under 540 kilos made from 338 to 402 cents. And heavier weights returned 328 to 352 cents a kilo. Heavyweight cows eased 10 cents, selling from 270 to 326 cents, and store cows were down 15 cents, selling at 204 to 290 cents a kilo. Heavy bulls remained firm at 240 to 318 cents. This has been Tracy Kilner for Meat and Livestock Australia's National Livestock Reporting Service.
Thank you, Tracy. So 730 last trade sale for the year, and that was up 79 on last week. And just a heads up, it is only a weaner sale next Thursday.
Hello, I'm Andy Park. Join me for The World Today. The nation's health ministers meet to tackle so-called bed block, with more than 3,000 aged care patients stranded in public hospitals, according to new figures. We're now losing more tax revenue on black market illegal tobacco than we're collecting on legal tobacco, forcing a rethink on attempts at a crackdown. And meet the new breed of birdfluencers, young birdwatchers sharing their finds with a huge social media following. Join me for those stories on The World Today.
5 minutes away from 1 o'clock. And the wool market has had a great run of late, and it certainly didn't slow down this week. Grant Lupton is from Nutrien Wool in Wongan Hills. Grant, please could you run me through all of the details?
Well, Kate, we continue on with the good news. We completed sale 24 this week, the national offering of 40,795 bales. We sold 38,428, and that goes to national pasture rate of just 5.8%. Over East on day one, the Eastern indicator lifted 12 cents to close at 1,533 cents. Day two, up another 9 cents, so up 21 cents for the week, and ended at a healthy 1,542 cents. But always better in Fremantle. Day one in Fremantle, we offered 3,796 bales. The Western indicator lifted 31 cents to close at 1,707 cents, and the grower said we'll take that with just 3.9% passed in. Day two, we offered 3,925 bales. Indicator gained another 5 cents, so up 36 cents a week to close at 1,712 cents. Did have 11.1% passed in, but 18 micron just came back about 10 cents, and that probably attributes to that. Individual fleece micron price guide on a clean base of Fremantle, 17.5 micron close to 2,072 cents, up 42 cents. 18 micron close at 2,000 cents, up 28 cents. 19 micron closed at 1,886 cents, up 22 cents. 20 micron closed at 1,844 cents, up 34 cents. 21 micron, just 10 cents less, closed at 1,834 cents, up 31 cents. And the Merino card index jumped a healthy 35 cents to close at 812 cents. You will notice between 18 and 21, there's just a 160 cents difference in price, just indicating how close things are at the moment. On the oddments, skirtings, they're up 50 to 85 cents, especially the 1920 micron. Lambs are up 30 cents, locks are up 20 cents, and crushings are up 30 cents.
Okay, sounds very positive. Who were the buyers this week?
Tech Wool Trading led the way with strong competition from PJ Morris Wools, Endeavour Wool Exports, and TNU.
Now, next week is the final sale for the year. How is it shaping up?
Well, as you said, last sale for the year. We've got another reasonable size offering of 40,509 bales, so back 300 bales nationally. Here in the West, we'll be offering 7,092 bales, just a one-day sale on the Tuesday, so that's back 600 bales. Melbourne and Sydney will be selling on Tuesday and Wednesday. And Kate, this is my last wool report for this year. If I could wish all the listeners and all you good ABC rural staff a very Merry Christmas, a Happy New Year, keep safe and well, and I look forward to bringing you more good news come the new year.
Oh, good on you, Grant. Thank you so much. Grant Lupton is from Nutrien Wool in Wongan Hills. It is 1 minute to 1 o'clock, and before I let you go, just to let you know that the Shire of Training has just imposed a harvest ban. And on the text line, a number of you have texted in with this viewpoint on the fishing, demersal fishing ban. Mark has said, these fisher people that are losing their business overnight will be able to sell their boats to the federal government so it can then gift them to illegal fishers to get them home safely. And then they can come back and fish illegally again in a nice, safe boat. This Labor government has lost the plot. Thank you, Mark. And Alex says, once again, the sledgehammer to crack a nut. First, it was the live sheep trade, then legal guns, and now legal fish. What is next? Thank you for your thoughts, Alex. And again, I really apologise for not getting through all of those texts today. So many of you wanting to have your say. So thank you for being part of the program. Have a wonderful weekend. I will be back with you on Monday at midday. It's 1 o'clock.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.